All right, did everybody get this map? Okay, so let me just go over this quickly because this is where you're going. I don't think y'all have seen a list of where you're going yet, have you? Not an official list? Okay, so you're going to go more places than this, too, but this is the big list. You'll hit some other spots along the way, like you're going to get to go to Rabbi Jamie Cowan's house, which is an absolute treat. So what I did was break it into two things. So you're going to go, well, let me show you some other maps first, but bottom line is you'll see, based on the Google map, the places that you're going, and I broke it out between the pre-Jerusalem and Jerusalem. You might want to pull it apart so you can see it better, but anyway, hopefully that will help you. If you are visual, how many of you guys are visual learners? Okay. I have to see it on the map to kind of figure out and feel comfortable. So we'll go through this a little bit together. But let me give you a little bit of background. Of course, Paul's going to give you a whole lot more background next time. Y'all know that Paul is a former rabbi at Tikvat Israel. He was the assistant rabbi there. He now runs the Hope for Israel Relief Fund, which is an amazing organization. So let me pray for us, and then we'll dive into the big stuff. Lord, I do pray for these pilgrims, that you're preparing their hearts and making a way for them. Lord, I pray for this time together, that they would feel closer to the land where they're about to go. Lord, knit them together as a team and with those who are yet to join them. Thank you, Lord, that you are good and gracious. Thank you for the land of Israel, for the beautiful picture that it is of your grace, both to the Jewish people and to us as Gentiles who've been engrafted in. So we give you praise for this time, and we give you blessing back for blessing us. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so first, for those of you who are not geography people, where is Israel? Well, this is the Mediterranean Sea. Is there anybody who didn't know exactly where Israel was before? We had some people on our trip who didn't have a clue. So this tiny little thing right here is Israel. And of course, it's surrounded by Arab nations. The 20 nations that surround it are all Arab. But the beautiful thing is, voila, it's right on the Mediterranean Sea. And you're going to see the Mediterranean Sea a lot this first couple days. So this is modern Israel. And I wanted you to just see where the Arab-occupied areas are. Some of you are probably very familiar with this. I am just young enough that the whole Arab-Israeli thing has not really been part of my culture. I was born in the early 70s, so I missed the 1960 wars. So I didn't know until 5 years ago that Israel was founded in 1948. So just cut me a little cultural slack there. But here you see these green areas are the occupied territories. And you will be in and out of the occupied territories. So you'll drive right through them. So it'll be fine. I just really want to encourage you not to be afraid. I never felt safer than when I was in Israel. I came home from Israel on a Friday night at midnight, and Monday morning was the Boston bombings. I felt much safer in Israel. You'll see armed the Israeli Defense Force, IDF people. You'll see them a lot, and they have guns strapped across their chest. I live in the inner city, so seeing military people and police was nothing new for me. It may unnerve you, but you should feel really protected when you see them. It should be a plus that when you see them. So there's that. Another little orientation thing. So it's not very big. It's 260 miles up and down, approximately the size of New Jersey. It's here 70 miles wide, and here it's only 12 miles wide. So just so you get a feel, it's not a big place. So going from Jerusalem to Galilee, you can make that drive in 2 hours easily, even in a tour bus. So just to give you a feel for the size of the way things are. And Tom has just arrived. So Tom, did you want to? We did a few brief introductions.
Great, thank you guys. I'm sorry I'm late. I promise I won't be late for Israel. just trying to get a couple things. This is our kickoff Sunday. Really busy. It's really glad you guys are here. Thank you for being here. And Jennifer, thank you so much for teaching.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, so this is the map that you have in your hand, essentially. And I just want to, so you're going to start here. This is Tel Aviv. You're going to fly into Tel Aviv. And right next to Tel Aviv is Yafo or Yaffa or Joppa. It's all those. All those are the same place. So it's Tel Aviv is just north of Joppa. And we're and then you'll go up to Netanya and spend the first night here. From there, you're going to go up to Caesarea. This is Mount Carmel here. Then down to the Valley of Jezreel, or the Jezreel Valley, then Megiddo, then up to Nazareth, and Jamie's house is just past Nazareth right here. Then you're going to go up to Tiberias, and then that's when you're going to spend, then you're going to spend a good amount of time up around the Sea of Galilee here. I think we spend 3 days in Galilee. So you'll land after that first night in Netanya. You'll spend the next 3 nights in the same hotel in Galilee, and I assume you're going back to the same place that we went.
They're going to a different place.
They are
actually into this sort of the city part.
Okay, probably slightly nicer than where we were. It was kind of motelish looking. The inside was nice, but it sort of had the look of a motel. Let me say something about the food. Do any of you all have food allergy issues? Okay, are you gluten?
No.
Okay. There is usually a smorgasbord, both at breakfast and at dinner. So you can usually make your way. I'm gluten-free, and it was a little problematic at times. So if you do have food issues, take something with you that you can nosh on. I also found that all the walking made me extremely hungry. So I took little power bar type things. I think pretty much everybody did. Power bars, and water will be available to you. You'll throw money in the kitty at the beginning, usually, and the bus driver will buy you water, and you just grab it as you need it. So you'll stop in the Tiberias area the first night, and then all around here is the Sea of Galilee with stops in various places. And then you'll go up north one day, up to the Golan Heights, right in here. This is Caesarea Philippi. Then you'll come down back here. You'll spend the night in Galilee. And then the next day, you're going to head down to a place called Beit Shean. And that's an archaeological dig. And you'll head all the way down. This is the Jordan River Valley right here. And starting right here, whoever's got the topographical map, you can see it's very dry. Very, very dry in here. So you're heading down here. And this is Qumran. Then you head on down to the Dead Sea. You're going to hang out here. Actually, you're going to hang out all the way down here. And then you'll come back up and hit Masada and En Gedi, and then into Jerusalem. So you'll spend one night in Netanya, 3 nights in the Sea of Galilee, 1 night in the Dead Sea here, and then you'll come up and spend the rest of your time in Jerusalem. Okay? So that's kind of the lay of how the flow of the trip will go. Any questions at this point? Okay. So what I want to do now is stop and give you, we're going to go back up through the tour, but we're going to do it visually this time with some pictures. Now, unless it has a citation like that, they're my actual pictures from the trip. So sometimes I didn't have the right picture, and you'll see when I've filled in, but I really wanted you to have a sense for what it's physically like there. Okay, so Old Jaffa or Jaffa. I love this picture because this is the city, the modern city of Tel Aviv. And so here's Jaffa right here. So you get a feel for how the old and the new are so blended. And what body of water is this?
Mediterranean Sea.
So it's right there, and it is gorgeous. This is in the old town of Jaffa. There's this beautiful just sort of settlement area here. What do you know about the history of Jaffa or Jaffa?
Is that where Simon the Tanner?
It is. It is. In the New Testament, Simon the Tanner. Excellent. How about good old Jonah? Where did he flee to Tarshish from? Joppa. Yeah. So it has a lot of Old Testament and New Testament history. It's a port town located just at the edge of Tel Aviv. It's been a center of shipping for 4,000 years. It has a wonderful, has always had a wonderful harbor there that's been there since the Bronze Age. So it's really, as you can see, Israel's on that trek. You sort of have to go through Israel as you're making your way up from Africa up to anywhere in the Middle East. So it's a great port city. And really, this is the first place, after you leave the airport, this is the first place you're going to see. And there are lots of wonderful ruins there. But it does have lots of biblical history. Not the least of which is Simon the Tanner. So in addition to Jonah leaving from there, Peter spent a fair amount of time in Jaffa. And so he did spend time. First he goes and He heals a woman named Tabitha, who's also called Dorcas, and that's when he ends up staying with Simon the Tanner. And while he's with Simon the Tanner, he has a vision. Do you remember the vision that he had? The sheet being lowered down with all the animals, allowing the Gentiles, allowing the Jews to eat some of the things that the Gentiles did. So, and then he goes off, he gets the call to go up to Caesarea to meet with, oh my gosh,
Cornelius,
yes. So that's Jaffa or Yaffa, Joppa or Yaffa. So that's the place that you'll start. You're going to be jet lagged because you will have flown overnight. So it's actually day two because you flew day one. And then from there, you're going to head up to Netanya. This is the view from our hotel room in Netanya. I made the mistake of being too tired to go down to the water. Don't do that. Go down to the water. Stick your toes in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I was the only one that went swimming and everybody else was chicken. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Is it cold?
Yes, it's cold.
It's freezing.
But it's so what? You're in the Mediterranean.
I just asked for information.
How often do you get a Mediterranean?
Yeah.
I want to know where we're meeting.
Yeah, don't be sippy.
You're thinking about it. Do it, Mark.
So you're heading up the coast. Y'all have your maps. You're heading up the coast here. So you spend the night in Netanya. The second day three, the second day in country, you go to a place called Caesarea, which has lots and lots of history. It's one of the places where Herod built a palace. In fact, you can see the ruins of Herod's palace here, and then some of the old harbor area over there. Herod built a breakwater out there that made this a wonderful port, and still, some of it's still there. Is Guy going to be your tour guide?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so your tour guide's name is Guy. Okay, Leibowitz, I think is his last name. Anyway, Guy is hilarious, but he doesn't say Herod. He says Herod, like R-O-A-D. So you'll hear lots about Herod. But what I did not realize before I went on the trip, and you may want to spend some time learning about, is Herod, while an absolute madman, was also the world's greatest architect. And he did amazing things, including building a number of palaces. So you're going to see a lot of what he constructed here at Caesarea.
Is this the same as Caesarea Philippi?
No, different place. Good question. Different place. Okay. From there, you're going to head by bus up to Mount Carmel. And this is the Carmelite Monastery right here. And that's our group standing up there. And this is the Valley of Jezreel here. What happened on Mount Carmel?
Elijah
what? Yes, so this, because it's one of the high places, one of the highest places in the Middle East, it was a popular place for Canaanites and other people to build idols. And the idol Baal was worshipped quite a bit there. So Elijah has a confrontation with the prophets of Baal there. And that's where they bring the offering and they pray and pray and pray and Baal does nothing. And then Elijah douses everything with water and the Lord brings down fire and burns up everything as a crispy critter. So that's here at Carmel. Actually, just below Mount Carmel. So this is a really wonderful spot, and you'll enjoy spending time here. It really affords you a wide view, and I wanted you to see this picture because one of the things that you really want to know before you go is the tremendous altitude changes you're going to experience. So I pulled out my hat and gloves. No, not my hat. I pulled out my scarf and gloves for this because it was nippy up there. You get down below, and it's not nearly so nippy. I was quite comfortable down below. So just know that you're going to want to have a knapsack with a couple of different options depending on the day. If you don't own a knapsack, I would strongly encourage you to buy one. I had a knapsack, which I usually left on the bus every day. But I also, ladies, you might especially like this. I had a bagolini, which was it went over my shoulder and was about this big. And I could keep camera and phone and all kinds of things. First aid, whatever, those little toilet seat covers and some tissues in case they were needed. I kept that stuff in this little bagolini. So you might consider something like that. I also kept my passport and things in that because it was up against my body and would have been very hard for someone to steal. You will, by the way, be able to leave things on the bus. The bus gets locked, so you can every day pile a bunch of stuff in the bus if you want to and have that as your home base because you're on and off, on and off, on and off.
Are you saying we'll have temperature changes within the same day?
Yes. Okay. Yes, sometimes radical temperature changes. The first day in Galilee, you won't. Second day, you might. Third day, you definitely will.
What do you mean, how much?
I mean, like, you wish you had shorts in the morning and you want a winter coat and a hat in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was like, we went up to Solon Heights, it was 35 degrees.
It was frigid
and
windy.
And then, like, an hour later, we're down in the valley and it's like 70. Did that just happen?
Yeah. It really is. Israel does have five very distinct climate zones, and you can hardly believe how different it is in such a tiny thing the size of New Jersey. But
what's the altitude change?
Let's see. Mount Carmel is 1,800 feet above sea level.
Oh, not very high.
No. Golan Heights might be a little higher than that. Mount Hermon is the most northern part. And I didn't look at the altitude on that. That's probably 2,500 feet, I would guess, maybe more. Somebody could probably Google it quickly. But you're going to be right at the base of Mount Hermon when you're up in the Golan Heights. So it is chilly. So somebody asked the question about clothing. Bring layers. My advice is to bring something like this as a coat. But I would also, if you're cold-natured, you're going to have this on most of the time. Mine has a lining, so I could take it out on the days when if I needed it as a raincoat, but I didn't need the warmth. I did bring a scarf and gloves because I am incredibly cold-natured, and sometimes I was cold on the bus. But you just need to know yourself. I would say the top things to bring, pants. Ladies, don't bring a lot of skirts. You're going to regret it. Maybe one or two for the evening, but I would bring pants and more pants. You can wear blue jeans anywhere. People do not dress up in Israel under any circumstances. You'll be hard-pressed to find someone in a tie. Absolutely, make sure you get your comfortable walking shoes now and make sure that you break them in well. Wicking socks are a good idea because of the temperature changes that happen. I would absolutely take shorts. I don't know who said not to take shorts, but I would absolutely take a pair or two of shorts. The only place you can't wear shorts are a couple of places in Jerusalem. And that would just be for the women. The men can always wear shorts. But I would just recommend out of respect that you probably wear long pants as much as you can. And Guy will let you know the day before kind of what the dress code is. But pants are the order of the day. So if you don't own any, I would suggest going and getting them. There are laundry opportunities along the way. For example, you could throw some in the first or second night you're in Galilee because you're going to be there overnight. And also in Jerusalem. Tom?
Yeah, I echo the kind of part. I love wearing shorts, but I just always wear khakis because it was just sort of that's the play thing to do.
Yeah.
And I took a wicking, like athletic gear. I like that because you can just breathe really nicely in the warm weather. And if you do get cold, you don't sweat, and then all that stuff where it starts to be more problematic.
Yeah, any of that Under Armour stuff, maybe wear that as your base shirt. Not every day, but especially when you get to Jerusalem, you're going to be hiking through some stuff, and you're going to get hot and then cold and hot and cold. But you're going to see so much, and you're going to love every minute of it. Okay, so really what I wanted you to see about Carmel is have the biblical background here. Also, a couple of David's wives were from this area, so it's really rich in biblical history. But the thing that it's most known for is that time with Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Also, the Shunammite woman, remember that Elijah grants her to have a child and the child gets sick? Well, Elijah is still at Carmel when the child gets sick, so she sends to Carmel to have him come, and he does come. All right. Let's move on to the Valley of Jezreel, or Jezreel Valley. So this is also a picture taken, I think, from Carmel, from another spot. And this has a really interesting history. Thousands and thousands of battles, it seems like, over the years happened here. It's called the breadbasket of Israel, and they grow all kinds of citrus fruit. It was a swamp when Israel bought it from the Arabs in the, I think it was the 1960s. And they drained it by planting eucalyptus trees and a bunch of other things. And now you can see, this is one of the ways that the Jews believe that God has his special hand on them, because the Arabs could do nothing with it. It was just a swamp, a giant swamp. And they set their hands to it, and it becomes the breadbasket of Israel, feeding all the Middle East with its fruit. So you'll hear a little bit about that. But here's, so Nazareth would be out in this direction over here. But really a beautiful, beautiful place. Egyptians, Hittites, Israelites, Philistines, Assyrians, Babylonians, Medes, Persians, Greeks, Romans, Crusaders, Muslims, Turks, French, and British have all fought in this valley. It is also known as the Valley of what? Armageddon. Yes. So this is the place that John got the vision. Yes.
Why would people pick a swamp for a battlefield?
I don't think it was always a swamp when... yeah. But by the time the Arabs had it, it was a swamp. Pretty useless. Okay, so from here, you're going to go down a little bit, down the valley a little bit further to a place called Megiddo. Armageddon means Hill of Megiddo. And here is, you can see that there's a little bit of history here. You'll see these markers everywhere, and I took lots of pictures of the markers so I wouldn't have to remember everything. And this is a tell that's been discovered, where this is a fortress city that guarded one of the passes into the Jezreel Valley. So here you go through layer after layer after layer. This is not one settlement. This is a bunch of settlements built on top of each other. And Israel is famous for these tells. In fact, now when you try to get a building permit, if it requires any sort of excavation, you have to have archaeologists come and certify it first. And if you're watching the news at all, just a couple days ago, I saw another article of something that's been discovered, and you'll get to see the Pool of Siloam, which was discovered not that long ago. So they're constantly finding new things. But that's Megiddo. Nazareth. So we had a wonderful meal in Nazareth. This is all homemade. We got to watch the bread being baked in an oven right in front of me. This was the time that I most hated being gluten-free because I couldn't eat it. And this is what the old village of Nazareth looks like, and it's surrounded by, above, the new village of Nazareth. So they have the old working village right there. What was Nazareth known for? Jesus' hometown, yeah. Traveling on, finally you get to Tiberias, and this is on the Sea of Galilee. It's a beautiful place, again, a wonderful mixture of the old and the new. And you can see that those are mountains. The Sea of Galilee is surrounded on all sides. Did y'all dip your finger in the bowl? Did that make it up to these guys? Let's pass it forward. So the Sea of Galilee is rimmed by mountains on all sides. So it's like a bowl, which is why the storms on the Sea of Galilee are so bad. Because the warm currents come in from the west off of the Mediterranean Sea. The cold airs come from Mount Hermon in the north through a pass there. They meet and tumble over each other on the Sea of Galilee, and the storms get terrible there.
So really, how big is the Sea of Galilee?
Not big, 6 miles by 8 miles. So you can obviously see quite all the way across it and almost from end to end. Okay. This is us on the Sea of Galilee. That's Nilita, and of course you probably know the Ludamans. So this is on the Sea of Galilee. I think almost every person from third who went, this was the highlight. I was expecting it to be the highlight, and it was the highlight for me. Your highlight may be totally different, but I loved it. That morning it was kind of hazy and cloudy, and we started to see how it could turn ugly quickly. The wind really started to blow while we were out there, but we really, really enjoyed it. The boat captain is a messianic believer, and he's a singer, and we just had a great time. Tom did a talk on the storm on the Sea of Galilee while we were there. So it really was a wonderful, wonderful experience, a great way to start off your time in Galilee. This is the Mount of Beatitudes. So Tiberias is down here. We drove around up here. And one of the things you'll notice in Israel is that there are churches almost everywhere, Catholic churches for the most part, on sites of historic significance. And that is due in part to St. Augustine's mother, who traveled to the Holy Land and marked these places out, and they planted Catholic churches there. Sometimes you're not exactly sure it's the right spot, but they're pretty sure that this is actually where Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount from Matthew 5, 6, and 7. I mean, you can see it's a natural amphitheater, and it's just beautiful. Really, really beautiful. Okay, moving on around, a little bit further around the bowl from here is the city of Capernaum. There was a synagogue during Jesus' time, and this is one that was built later. This is kind of looking through the front door of the synagogue here. And then this is standing on the front porch of the synagogue looking towards the sea. There's the sea right there, so Capernaum is right on the water. This is another Catholic church here, and the reason that it's built the way that it is that underneath here is Peter's house. So this is the bottom of the church. That is part of Peter's house under there. And it's been preserved. So what do you know about Capernaum?
It's pretty much Jesus' headquarters.
Yes. When Jesus left Nazareth, he went to Capernaum. He also picked up a bunch of the disciples there. Peter lived there. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, lived there. Peter and Andrew both had moved there with their fishing business also. And it was a huge center of trade at the time. So it was kind of a bustling fisherman town at that time.
So it's on the Sea of Galilee.
It is. It's at the northern edge of the Sea of Galilee. There's a prophecy that Jesus spoke over Capernaum because he performed many, 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 many miracles here. The healing of Peter's mother-in-law, the healing of the centurion's servant, Jairus' daughter, the nobleman's son. There were lots and lots of healings. And Jesus said to Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum that if they didn't listen, they would be destroyed. And in fact, it was destroyed. So Jesus' prophecy was fulfilled. All right, we're going to zip through a bunch of these. But I also wanted to go ahead and start passing around some of these things. I wasn't sure my pictures were going to turn out, so I bought some of these triptych postcards. So I'm going to pass them around. Jaffa, Capernaum. Then you'll start seeing Sea of Galilee stuff. So at the back, there are some maps of Masada and Engedi. So I'm going to start passing those around. Y'all can take a look as you have time. But I'm going to zip through the next couple of things because they're not... The background didn't seem as important to me. Magdala is a ruin that is right on the sea also that's recently been discovered where Mary Magdalene is likely from. This is the Yardnet baptismal site. You will have the opportunity to get baptized. Nobody from our group did last time, but the Methodist folks, every single one of them did. And they said this was really the highlight for them. I think to a person, this was their highlight. So you walk down, you get these white robes, and walk down into this area, and you can be baptized. So there's that option. And from here, you go back to your hotel, and then this is the day where the temperature changes are really dramatic. So from here, that morning, you start up into the Golan Heights, and I just wanted you to see how that rise quickly happens. Remember, the Sea of Galilee is rimmed by this mountain area. This is really this is the northernmost place that we went. This is Mount Banal. It's an old fort. And looking out here to the north, you can see this is Syria over here. Lebanon here. Syria would have been over here. But we could see Lebanon and Syria from where we were standing. This is right on the border. There's a wonderful coffee shop here and great gift shop for what it's worth. It was really an interesting and kind of scary thing. We went down in the bunkers. Anybody claustrophobic? Even slightly claustrophobic? Okay. You need to make sure of a couple of places that you let them know that you're claustrophobic. You may not want to go down in these bunkers. And then when you go into the tunnels in Jerusalem, if you're claustrophobic, you're not going to enjoy that because it's a long, long hike and walls that are not much wider than the podium.
So
it's lit. but it's slippery and treacherous, and it was maybe my favorite thing, actually. But I think Tom and Nilita and I kept slipping and falling into each other, and it was just a...
It was dangerous. It was fun.
Yeah. We had one guy decide not to go, but the rest of our group of 20-something went. And I can believe some of the more elderly folks, they were amazing getting through those things. The rocks were really wet and slippery, but it was totally fun.
If you commit to go, is there a time when you can turn around and get out?
No, that's the problem. You can't get out. It's a mile underground. Yeah. Yeah. And at places it's a little wider, like this, but it doesn't ever get wide. And sometimes we had a guy with us who was 6'5", and he was bent over a good portion of the time. So at most places it's only about 6. The lowest it would get would be about 6'2", 6'3".
You can see Doug in the red jacket. I mean, he has that
corner coat on. Oh, yeah. So does Courtney. So you can see how we layered up. And right here.
And I'm freezing right there.
Yeah.
That didn't dress appropriately.
Yeah. Layers are going to be your friend. And remember, you've got the bus, so you can peel them off and leave them on the bus. Okay? The bus is your friend. Now, the bad news is there's no bathroom on the bus. So take every bathroom opportunity that you get, because you're going to be drinking a lot of water or two. That said, one positive thing that we weren't expecting is that our bus had Wi-Fi, the first bus we were on. So you may have Wi-Fi. I'm not making any promises because the second bus didn't have Wi-Fi, but that sure was nice for those of us who didn't have international phones. Okay, so this was another wonderful spot where we stopped, and I'm not going to tell you too much about Caesarea Philippi because Guy, the tour guide, is really going to tell you a lot about this. But suffice it to say that this is where Jesus tells the disciples, "Upon this rock I will build my church," and it won't Peter he was talking about. It was this rock. And himself. So there's a wonderful story about why Jesus dragged the disciples all the way to the north, to the base of Mount Hermon, to do this. It has to do with the history of this place.
Yes, probably my top three.
Yeah. Really, really fascinating. And this is the beginning of the... This is one of three little ponds and streams that turns into the beginning of the Jordan River. So it's really fascinating. This is where I bought the topographical map, with Caesarea Philippi. Also called Banais, B-A-N-A-I-S. Okay, day six is when you start south, and this is when it starts to get considerably warmer. So I think I left my jacket on the bus for this day. Beit Shean is one of those tells, and this is what it looks like today. That's a model. This hill right here, this is this. So it's an archaeological dig. You'll stop there and wander around for probably a good hour, 2 hours there. You'll see all kinds of amazing things. Heading south, this is the beautiful Jordan Valley. Very, very rich and lovely, and then it's suddenly not. Because then you get to Qumran, and this is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, in a cave like this. And so this is looking west. Jerusalem is just on the other side of that hill there. I'll write down the mileage somewhere. 60 miles west of right here is the city of Jerusalem. So you can see the changes. And this was just probably 30 miles south of where that last picture. So it really changes radically and quickly. So this is Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Y'all know the importance of the Dead Sea Scrolls? You might get to see them. Well, actually, there's one right there that's at Qumran. Most of them are housed in the Israeli Museum, which we actually got to go to. It's not on your list, but it wasn't on ours either, so you might get to go and see it. So in the spring of 1947, a little shepherd boy found the cave and found the beginning of the scrolls. And it really did a great deal to confirm the scripture that had been found. Up until then, we only had 6th century copies of scripture, and now we have scriptures that go back to 300 BC all the way to 70 AD. And they matched word for word with the 6th century ones, which tells you that the copying was done really, really well. So there's lots more history to this, but that I wanted you to know a little bit more about Qumran and just see the different geological structures. And here's the Dead Sea. So Qumran is, a little further up, looking like this. This is from the hotel window. I assume you're going to stay in the same place. So these are swimming pools here. This is the Dead Sea. This is the pool at the hotel, which has Dead Sea water in it. And that's Rob, the guy who's 6'5", floating in the salt water. Y'all know that you don't sink in it. It's, you could read the newspaper on your tummy in it.
He's 6'5", 275. Like, he's like a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
And he's huge.
Huge.
He's like, whatever.
Now, I will say this. Most of you are going to want to get in the Dead Sea. I had no desire. I have really sensitive skin. I got into it up to my ankles. It burned my skin. I came right back out. Didn't bother you at all, did it, Tom?
It's like very tingly and crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, if you have sensitive skin, just don't do it.
Get in, you can get to a shower fairly quickly. And
reasonably so. Yeah, even on the beach, there's a little shower pool. Yeah, but you just can't. Yeah, it's really, 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 really salty. So, you'll have a great time there. That night, you're going to get to do a Shabbat service with Jamie and Stacey Cowan. And so that on Friday night, everything shuts down in Israel, starting about 4 o'clock. Don't try to go grocery shopping on Fridays. It's a mess because people are buying the groceries for their Shabbat meal. And so from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday is Shabbat. And you'll notice that the elevators are set for Shabbat, so they don't even press the button. The Orthodox Jews won't even press the button on the elevator, so it stops at every floor, which is really aggravating. But. Okay. The next day, you get up, and this is where you really should consider wearing shorts and wicking things, because in April, I was sweating to beat the band here. Tom, did you get hot at Masada?
Yeah, it's like, I think it was like 85 or 90.
And even though it's super dry, I was really, really, really hot. Now, y'all are going a month earlier, so it won't be quite as hot, but I got quite overheated here. So this is a plateau. This was a fortress built by Herold. A mountain fortress. You can see it's a plateau there. Here is where Herod's palace had three tiers. This was all fortress and growing things. But this was where his palace was in three different layers here. You will come up this side here on a cable car. Some people wanted to walk up it, but I'm glad after I realized how hot it was that I did not do that. This is going to become important. This is a ramp that the Romans built up to it when it was sieged in 73 AD, and I'll have a closer picture of that in the next slide. But the story behind Masada is that it was built by Herod, but when the Zealots, in around 68 AD, the Zealots were really starting to cause the Romans a lot of problems in Jerusalem and around the area. And so the Roman legions came in, and they occupied Jerusalem. That's when 70 AD is when the Jews scattered and the temple was torn down in Jerusalem, and they just kept heading. So the Zealots headed out to Masada and went up in that fortress and kept themselves there. But in 73 AD, after 3 years of besieging this and building this ramp, the Romans finally broke in, only to discover that the night before, 960 people had either committed suicide or been killed by their own people to protect themselves from the Romans. So it's a really sad, terrible place in the sense of that. It is one of Israel's most popular tourist destinations. Here's what that palace looked like. That's Guy, by the way. Notice the bottle of water. Very hot, very dry. Here are the three layers there. And this is looking down on the three layers. I must have taken the siege ramp out. Oh, no, there it is. Okay, so lots of wonderful ruins there. You'll see all kinds of fun things. That was, I think, part of a storehouse there. And this is the siege ramp from the side. So they built that thing. So that's a fascinating place to go. And then our last stop for today is En Gedi. What's En Gedi? Anybody remember David cutting off the corner of Saul's cloak?
Yes.
That was when David was hiding in the caves of En Gedi. So En Gedi is just up from Masada in that crazy dry area, except for there are these springs that come right through just in this one area. And so they fall through here. And up all around in here are caves, and you'll see the caves. It's a national park. There's one of the things is the you can fold out the guide to the national park. It's at the back. Wonderful. We saw all kinds of creatures. Really, really lovely. But I got really overheated here, too, and I ended up having to wet my shirt down in the falls just to stay cool. I don't think anybody else got that hot, but I did. So this is Nilita and me standing next to the fall. It's, again, this is one of those places where you want to have good shoes with some good treads because the rocks are slippery, but you don't want to miss getting to hike in. So I highly encourage good footwear. Yeah, Blair.
Would hiking boots be too warm, you think?
No, I would encourage hiking boots, especially if they're really comfortable. Mm-hmm. They may be too much for Jerusalem. Yeah, I would say tennis shoes definitely for Jerusalem and probably Galilee too.
And when I'm saying tennis shoes, we're not talking about the wimpy tennis shoes. We're talking about good, solid
cross trainers.
Cross trainers.
You want to have shoes with good treads everywhere. Maybe I'll wear my Israel. I have bought a pair of Nayot shoes before I went at Ritchie and Company. They're Israeli shoes, and they're a little dressier, but had really good traction on the bottom, and just comfortable is absolutely the order of the day. I have problems standing. I have really bad knees and back. I had a lot of trouble. There's a lot of standing. If you have trouble standing, I would encourage you to get one of those tiny little three-legged stools with a canvas seat and keep it in a backpack or something. If I went back, I would absolutely take one of those because you're standing around while guy tells you stuff, and it was killing my knees.
Can you just sit on the ground?
You can sit on the ground, but it's a little hard in places. Sometimes it's wet. I would not go back without a little stool of some sort just because of my particular knee problems. So anyway, En-Gedi is the last stop before you get to Jerusalem. And next week we'll spend all of our time, in 2 weeks we'll spend all of our time on Jerusalem and helpful tidbits. So let me end there.
Yeah, and I'll just make one other quick little recorded comment. Last year when we went, we had none of this. And so we were just like hitting the ground running. And so I think just as an educator and as a disciple, for us to kind of learn some of this stuff, for remember this biblical and archaeological information before you hit the ground, it's going to make it even more memorable for you because you have that baseline versus I kind of remember what happened there, but I don't remember, so then you kind of are scrambling. So take advantage of what Jennifer's showing you. Go back, do some more right reading in the Bible, you know, make some notes, and then when you get there, you're going to say, oh man, this is really cool. So make sure you do some, I'm going to encourage you all to keep reading. Look at some of these key Bible texts. And really helpful to kind of, thank you so much.
Yeah, we didn't even really know where we were going until we got there and got the little booklet that is being hopefully still making its way around. So hopefully you'll have a sense of things. Bobby?
Did you actually take 2 suitcases or 1 big suitcase and the smaller carry-on?
I took a suitcase and a pilot's case and a knapsack.
And when you say a knapsack, you mean a backpack?
Yes. Yes. You're going to want something that's well padded, that goes over both shoulders, that you can carry around, or something like the Bagalini, because you're going to want stuff with you. I got my camera, my phone, my passport, some money, food in my little Bagalini. I didn't often take the backpack unless we were going multiple places without going back to the bus, and then sometimes I did take the backpack. But I really encourage you to take the backpack, to have one with you. Oh, actually, they're going to give you one.
Yeah, but it's sort of... Yeah, and it's the one with the little rope.
Yeah.
It's not the...
No, they gave us a black backpack, a black canvas backpack. So if you don't have one, you're going to get one. It's not going to be the most well-padded, but you're going to want to carry around a bottle or two of water. I encourage you to take a refillable water bottle with you too. There are going to be times when you're going to want to have more than one water bottle with you. So, Tom.
Just quick packing. You know, I don't know if Paul will say this, but I think the limit's either 50 pounds or 60. So I would encourage you to be like...
It was 50.
Okay, 50. So pack 40 pounds.
Yeah.
Because you'll probably want to bring stuff back.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's free if it's under 50. But if it's like 50 pounds or 1 ounce, it's like $150 charge. So you don't want to be like jettisoning all your cool, nice clothes or your gifts that you get. So again, just sort of pack smartly in that regard.
You can take 2 suitcases.
I can't remember what the rule is, but I only recall kind of carrying one.
1 50-pound.
And then one
small.
Carry-on.
which does not include the backpack. If you had a backpack, that would not be considered a carry-on.
You can carry
a purse. It goes as your purse. You can't carry a purse and a backpack.
Yeah. You've got to get your purse in the backpack.
Got to get it in there.
Yes. Yes, I would encourage you women not to take a purse. Just don't even take one. It's just worthless. There's just not any time you're going to want to have a purse with you. You're either going to take your backpack or you're going to have a bag like my Bagalini. But there's just no need for a purse. There really isn't. Yeah.
The phones, do you go just Verizon and figure out how you're going to use your iPhone?
Yeah. Yeah, you. Well, I don't know how an iPhone works because I don't think they don't have SIM cards, do they? Anyway, yes, just talk to your carrier if you want to use it. I didn't find that I needed my phone. I was really delighted to be able to email when I was on the bus, but you may or may not have that option. Most of the hotels have Wi-Fi. We found that it was pretty sketchy, though, very hard to use.
Yeah,
why did you change to email?
I just took my BlackBerry.
Oh, okay.
So what you can do, which I didn't know this, you can turn off like the phone feature, the turn on the wireless feature, and then, so you can do all your emails, check your, any website. You can't make a phone call. Once you start making phone calls, that's when they really jack up the price like crazy.
Or it may not even work. Most phones won't even work.
Like 45 cents a minute or $2 a minute. So, yeah, for those of you who really want to have phone comp, for emergencies, maybe for you, you might want to look at getting an international plan. Okay, good.
I don't have any emergency.
Good. Like an international plan.
Just use the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. Saves you a lot of money. And it just, like Jennifer said, you don't really miss it. It's great to be unplugged, actually, from the phone for 9 days.
I'll tell you what I did that I'm really glad I did. I sent my coworker and friend back a travel log every day. I think I sent it to my mom and to my friend Beth. And I would shoot pictures back, and I would describe some of the highlights so that I would have that as a memory. For me, that was more fun than just taking notes in a notebook. Another thing I would suggest is if you take pictures, log what the pictures are. You won't remember when you get back. So that's just another tip.
How about adapters?
Yes, you definitely, absolutely must take adapters. If you're going to use your phone, for emailing and all those sorts of things, you absolutely need an adapter.
Like a $10 at Radio Shack, wherever, Amazon, it's really cheap.
How do you know what kind for Israel? They're specific.
Yeah, they're specific for Israel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so the one I have for the four won't use.
No. Go get one specifically for Israel.
Interesting.
You can get a AAA or Target or whatever. All right, any last questions? Because it's time for church for those of you who haven't been.